So I thought it would be good. As a lot of you know, my family and I came here a year ago. We arrived on a Sunday afternoon, January 20th, 2013, and began a new journey together with you all. My background, which will be kind of helpful for some of you to know why I'm so rebellious, my background was I grew up not a Christian, didn't go to church, didn't know Moses from Jesus. When I was 18, 19, I started becoming more open to the gospel. I had been very closed to it, creeped out by it, and even antagonistic. I can remember one night, my friends and I used to go to Hollywood to party in high school and right after high school, and I remember one night walking down Hollywood Boulevard, and this guy comes up with a little gospel, you know, track set, and he said, I still remember the words, he says, "Do you know the real Jesus?" And I took the track and I ripped it up and I threw it at him and I said, "Do you know the real Satan?" These were the days of, you know, heavy metal, satanic heavy metal, and so it was fun to do that sort of thing. The guy just sort of looked at me weird and kept going. But that was me. That's where I was at. And after that, I started to wonder, well, is there some ultimate purpose to life? Is there a God? And so started searching, started being open, started having philosophical conversations with people, and God started placing Christians in my life, and I would ask them tons of questions. And so I became more open, and the more I heard the story of Jesus, the more I heard the gospel, the more I realized this is true. This is really true, and if Jesus died on the cross for my sins, if I was worth dying for, then he's worth living for. That's the way I looked at it, and I became a fanatic. We had a band, and so we started a Christian band at the time, and that really was horrible. It was a good thing God led me out of that and sort of moved me over the next few years into more of a teaching ministry and evangelistic ministry. But later on, I went back to school. I pursued a theological degree and then went on staff at a church and felt God moving in me to plant a church. And so we moved to Long Beach, California, a city of almost 500,000 people, which I thought was a big city until we moved to Mexico City. That's like a little blip compared to where we're at here. And we started a church. And so I'm a church planter. Church planters tend to be initiators, self-starters, very independent, you know, machete in the mouth, kind of let's carve a swath through the jungle. And so, and the motto in church planting is, because people ask, why start new churches? There's lots of churches in America. Why do we need another church? Well, the fact is that there's more churches that close every year in America than start. I think that's changing. But when we set out 8 years ago, that was the statistic. A lot of people think, well, I see lots of churches. There's one down on the corner of Maple and First, and there's one over there. There must be enough churches. And the fact is, there's not enough churches. Even in the most churched cities in Mexico or America, there's not enough churches. There's always a need for more. And new churches tend to be much more alive. They tend to attract people who want to go somewhere and do something and glom onto the mission of Christ and pursue it, whereas older churches tend not to. So the motto in church planting is, it's easier to give birth than to raise the dead. The idea being, let's start a church because that's easier than going to some old church and trying to raise it when it's already dead. Research has shown that when a church starts, it has a 25-year life cycle, 25-year arc, and it goes just like that. It goes up, it plateaus around the 15, 20-year mark, and usually by the 25-year mark, unless they've made incredible efforts, it's usually dead or irrelevant. So, I got this good buddy, Joshua Smith. He moved to Mexico City a couple of years ago, and almost two years ago, it was like March or April of 2012, Joshua contacts me and he says, "Hey, I know of this church. We've kind of built a relationship. They lost their pastor in December, and they're looking for a pastor. I think you should consider the position." And so we Skyped and we talked about it and talked about, you know, how old the church is, the demographic of the church, the location of the church, all of that. And I asked a ton of questions and I said, "How old's the church again?" "Well, this is our 140th year. This building has been here since 1953, but the church started 140 years ago. So my church planter side said, no, that'd be dumb. That church has got to be deader than doing security at a Pat Boone concert. Just not gonna do that. And it was a long shot. We have teenagers. You just don't uproot teenagers and take them to another country. And I didn't like the idea of having fights. When we started Anchor Church in Long Beach, there was nobody to fight with. We created the DNA. We started a certain culture, certain values, and we pursued it. And the people who came because of those values. I said I'd much rather do that than go into an established organization and try to bring change. So why am I here? I have no idea. But we're in this together, so let's just do it. What I want to do, we're going to review kind of some of the stuff that happened last year, hopefully to inspire us to see God working in our midst. But I want to share some core values of our church. Well, they're my core values. We haven't, as an elder board, really hammered these out, and I'm really hoping that the other guys buy into them, because these have been my values for years. And I think when an organization has values, those don't change over time. Those are the things that they'll believe until they die. Your goals, your approaches, your methodology, that will change, but our values shouldn't change. And I think these values come out of the Bible. They might need some tweaking. Nothing's perfect. But I want to run through these so you can see where Union Church is coming from. And if you come to our mission class, which is our membership process, in a month or two, we'll go through this and other aspects of our philosophy. But number one priority for, and I believe this is not just Union Church, I mean, other churches may tweak these a bit, but I think these are really core, hence the name core values. Number one, all people are valuable. Okay, so that's our first value, and I want you to see where this comes from, because this comes right out of the first chapter of the Bible. When God created Adam and Eve, when he created mankind, he says in Genesis 1:26, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. This is God speaking as a plurality. God is a Trinity. In verse 27, he says, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Later, in Genesis chapter 9, after Noah's flood, he's giving instructions to Noah and warns about shedding man's blood, that if you shed the blood of humankind, this is the first instance of capital punishment, showing the seriousness of taking a human life. The reason why is because humans are created in the image of God. Okay, so why this is relevant is I believe that evolution equals no intrinsic value for humanity. This is why I think this is crucial. Now, Richard Dawkins can say that people are valuable and we should treat them with dignity and respect, but he has no good reason to think that. Because if we all popped out of some prebiotic ooze millions of years ago, then why not just kill or be killed? And why did morality sort of randomly glom onto humanity? Why don't we hold lions accountable for killing gazelles and eating them in public? What's the difference? If we all came from the same source, if we don't reflect the image of God created in us, as Psalm 139 says, if we're not fearfully and wonderfully made by a creator, I have no good way to tell Jeffrey Dahmer not to eat his neighbors. There's no good reason. So I believe that theism, the belief in God, and especially Christian theism, is the only sound foundation for attributing intrinsic value to humans. So because of that, we treat people with love and respect regardless of age, race, skin color, socio-political status, education, looks, or smell. We treat you because no matter who you run into, they are an image bearer of God. That's pretty serious stuff. Christians of all people on earth should show love and dignity, a treat with dignity other humans, whether they're homeless or whether they're the president, because they bear the image of God. It's tweaked, it's been corrupted through sin, but it's still there. So we hold all people to be intrinsically valuable so that when you walk on our campus, on Sunday morning, or when you come to our house for dinner, my hope is that you will be treated with love and dignity. As you'll see in a minute when we get into the stuff that we did in 2013, hopefully you'll see these values emerging from the things that we do, because this is what drives any changes that I initiated last year. These are what drive those changes. Okay, number two, actually, one last thing. Mother Teresa has a great quote. I hope it's from her because it's a great quote. When she talked about helping the poor in India, she said, "They are Christ to me." So when you have a problem with somebody smelling really bad outside of City Market, remember that they are Christ to you. Jesus said something similar in Matthew 25, and he says, "Inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me." And that's pretty serious stuff. Take again when Paul the Apostle was, before he became an apostle, he was persecuting the church, and Jesus said, "Why are you persecuting me?" when he ran into him. Value number two, the church should love and serve the city. This comes out of Jesus' own words in Matthew. In Matthew 5:16, Jesus says to us, Matthew 5, actually we're starting in 14. "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives life to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." And actually, right before that, in verse 13, he talks about Christians being the salt of the earth. He gives these two analogies. One is that Christians are the light of the world, and the other is that they're the salt of the earth. One historian wrote in the second century, he said, "Is there anything, salt was so important in ancient times." He said, "Is there anything more important than salt and sunshine?" Now, today you wouldn't look at it like that. There's a handful of you who are freaks for salt. You salt everything. If you had a bowl of salt, you would put salt on it. That's not what we're talking about here. Salt, yes, adds flavor. We all love salt. But that's not what's going on. Salt was a preservative because they didn't have refrigeration back then. So salt was the way that you preserved things. Salt had all of these different functions in society, including it was actually a part of a Roman soldier's wages. That's where we get the word salary from. The Latin word for salt is the root of the word salary. That's how crucial salt was in ancient times. So whereas it doesn't hit us as strongly, it would have hit Jesus' original audience very strong. You are the salt of the earth? Wow. That's like saying you're the internet in our day. The other thing he says is, you're the light of the world. Well, light in the scripture always speaks of revelation. It has the idea of holiness, but it has the idea of revelation. We talk about it today. You know, I was there, and I was confused, and then the lights came on, right? The idea is that I suddenly could see what the problem was and how to solve it. And he says, the church is the light of the world. Bill Hybels, a pastor in America, says that the local church is the hope of the world. That's a big responsibility and privilege for the church to be the hope of the world. So when Jesus says, let your light shine so that others will see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven, Jesus says there's a direct connection between your good works and people seeing God. So that the intention of the church, the mission of the church, is to go and do good in our city so that people will go, hey, there's something different about you guys. Now, I have a story to tell from our experience in Long Beach, because we went to Long Beach 8 years ago with this, armed with this core value. We're going to go and we're going to do acts of kindness in our city, whether it's something small like buying a stranger's drink at Starbucks, or going and helping the poor, doing feedings, or helping people move. We ran into a lady when we first moved there. We were going business to business, handing out cookies, introducing ourselves, and we met this lady who had been stricken with MS, and she was having to close her business and move all of her stuff in storage, and we said, we'll help you. And so she calls us 3 weeks later when she closed up, and we went at night. We spent like 4 hours, and we helped her move all of her stuff out. We were perfect strangers. So whether it's buying someone's drink at Starbucks just to blow their mind, or helping strangers move, or bringing meals to people who are friends of friends who just had a baby and they're overwhelmed, we went armed with that mentality, and I fully believe this is what the church should do in our city and in our midst. Think of all the relationships that are represented here. I believe we should do this sort of thing. But what happened in Long Beach is that we did that thinking that Long Beach was going to go, wow, and Long Beach yawned. Because there are tons of people doing social justice and good deeds in the city. We went there, and we were just another blip on the map, because so many, Long Beach became sort of this hipster place to go, and you know, so people go and do beach cleanups on Saturdays, and they go and do this for the poor, and this for AIDS victims, and we were just another face in the crowd, and we realized, it came home to us again, that one of the core values further down the line here was crucial, and that is that we have to speak the word of God, because we don't draw people to our church because we have better fellowship, because we have better snacks, because we do greater deeds in the city. Ultimately, why people come is the gospel of Christ. That's what distinguishes us. That's what distinguishes us from this guy, Justin, who had like 3 websites dedicated to himself and all the good deeds he was doing in Long Beach. That's what distinguishes us from him. But as a base, as a platform to work from, the church should be known for its good deeds in the city. We should be. And the hope is that people will go, what is it about you guys? I've heard about your church. So the result is we love and serve our city and world, and we speak truth to it. Number 3, spiritual growth occurs through shared life. This comes right out of Ephesians, where we were teaching from last year a little bit. Let me just read you this section from Ephesians. This drives my mentality of community, of Sunday morning, of midweek community groups. This comes from Ephesians 4, starting in verse 11. You can just listen. Paul says, "So Christ himself gave the apostles and prophets, the evangelists, pastors, and teachers to equip his people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up, until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ." Notice how growth is combined with fellowship. Verse 14, "Then we will no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves." The idea that we're ignorant, we don't understand how God's plan, we don't understand God, we don't understand the Christian life. And the idea is that we would begin to understand these things in community, so that we're not blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. Now this is crucial, verse 16. "From him the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, muscle, tendon, whatever, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work." So the idea is that the church grows by the contribution of every person, and every person grows by the contribution of every other person, and every person grows by the contribution of the church as a whole. Did you write that down? So what it's not, what Christianity is not, what church is not, is one guy at the top who's the pastor, and everybody just comes every week and learns from him. That's what it's not. Sunday morning for us is a hub. I hope, as we've started 2 community groups last year that meet midweek, hopefully we'll have a third one starting soon. My hope is that this Sunday morning worship service is not the be-all, end-all of your Christian life. This is sort of the hub where you come. It's the big gathering of the church, but that your mainstay will be your Tuesday night fellowship group or community group that you go to, or Friday night or whatever, will be the fellowship that you have, the community that takes place during the week, and that this is just part of it, and that we learn from each other. If anything, Paul the Apostle is saying we learn from each other. There's dozens of one another's in the New Testament. Encourage one another, love one another, challenge one another, comfort one another. Well, you can't do those things very well when I'm standing up here being the only one talking. So the New Testament teaching assumes more than just you come on Sunday morning and listen to a talking head. the value that comes out of that, since spiritual growth occurs through shared life, therefore we grow together through shared life. This is why Paul uses the body metaphor. And my hope is that we'll start tons of community groups all over our city. And they don't have to be like formal Bible studies with, you know, notes and all of that, but rather we gather together, and maybe you've got, you know, four or five of you live in the same neighborhood and none of you considers yourself a teacher. Maybe you're all new believers. Start meeting. Start meeting and having dinner and praying together at least, and maybe reading the Bible together. What's the worst that could happen? You could learn together. That's my hope. My hope is that so that when someone comes to Union Church and says, well, I live in Roma. Perfect. We've got a group that meets there on Thursday nights. It's an awesome group. You know, well, I live in Satellite. Well, we have a group there too. It just started. It meets on Friday nights. It's awesome. The lady who hosts it's an awesome cook, and everybody comes and she cooks for the planet, and it's a great place to be and to encourage each other. Okay, connected with this value is the next value. Very closely connected is value number four. Making disciples is the Christian mission. This comes straight out of Jesus' own words at the end of after he had risen from the dead. His final instructions to the church, last words of anybody, are very important. This is what Jesus said to his followers right before he ascended back to the Father. In Matthew 28:18, Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." This is why Christians shove their views on other people. Seriously. This is why we do it, you know. Have you ever been in a conversation and someone says, "Well, I just don't like how you evangelicals have to shove your views on other people." Well, this is why. This is why. It's a mandate from our leader. The atheist Christopher Hitchens really did see this more clearly than 99.9% of the people out there. Hitchens said, look, if the Bible is true, which he didn't think it was, but if the Bible is true, Christians are obligated to go share their faith. They're obligated. It's a mandate. It's one of the primary reasons the church exists. Look, if you have the cure for AIDS and you start sharing it with people, is somebody going to go, "Hey, man, I don't like you shoving your cure for AIDS down our throats"? I don't think so. But of course, the world doesn't see the gospel as the cure for AIDS. I get that. That's fine. But appreciate the fact that if the Bible's true, whether you believe it or not, but I do, if it's true, then this is my mandate. This is why I exist. And if it's true, it's not just a mandate that I begrudgingly follow. It's a passion. How could I not want other people to join me in eternity? How could I come into contact with the living God? The living God who sent his Son, who pursued humanity, sent his Son to wipe away the sins of the world so that there could be a path to him. How can I come in contact with the living God and not want you to know? And not want you to know what he's done for me and what he can do for you? So that's our passion. And that saturates everything we do. Every other core value is saturated by that idea of mission. Even the way we structure worship on Sunday morning has mission in mind, and I'll get to that in a second. The way we do community, our goal is that community groups will also be evangelistic, that you'll have your community group, and yeah, you guys study the Bible on Tuesdays, but maybe Friday nights or every other Friday night, you do like a neighborhood dinner, or you invite people from your work, and so you're mixing your Christian friends and unbelieving friends in hopes that Christians will be a light together to their friends. Hopefully, Christians in the room, you have unbelieving friends. Who else is going to tell them about Jesus? So then, core value number five, and there's only six, so don't fret. Core value number five is we owe God everything. We owe God everything. And so the result is we worship together. Just listen to one passage from the book of Romans. Paul the Apostle, after going through this incredibly rich theology of all that God has done in his plan for the salvation of mankind, in 11:23 of Romans, he says, "Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them. For from him and through him and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. Our vocation eternally as the people of God will be to worship. The one thing that is constant into eternity is worshiping God. When you go to the book of Revelation, you'll see glimpses of the eternal situation. You'll see glimpses of eternity. And what are they doing? Whether it's angels or humans, they're worshiping. Because they're just so overawed. It's like, let's say your team is playing in the Super Bowl next Sunday, or whatever day it's going to turn out to be because of the weather. What are you going to do on the first drive if your team gets a touchdown? What's your reaction going to be? Bravo, fellas. I knew Peyton could do it. Wonderfully done. Wonderfully. Don't you think that was wonderfully done? Beautiful, chaps. Beautiful. No, you're going to freak out. You're going to be jumping up, screaming, just like you do when you're worshiping God, right? No, Lance, I'm Presbyterian. What? Why is it okay to freak out when Tom Brady throws this 50-yard touchdown pass? But in church, we don't even clap when the choir just busts out an awesome song like they did today. Why not? Why don't we raise our hands? Why don't we clap to the Lord? Why don't we shout to God? Shout to the earth. Shout all the earth. I think there's something in the Bible about that. So when you come to church, pretend it's a football game. If that helps you, I don't know, whatever helps you worship. But look, this is practice for eternity, and you don't want to stink at worshiping when you meet Jesus. Okay, where were we? Last value, leaders are essential. Leaders are essential. We just read in Ephesians 4 that it says God gave the church leaders. God gave the church leaders. The rest of that quote that I shared from Bill Hybels, he said, the local church is the hope of the world, and its future depends on its leaders. I firmly believe in developing and in cultivating a leadership culture here at our church. And so from day one, from the week we landed here, I began looking around for leadership gifts, whether it's in children's ministry or music ministry, or whether it's the connection team that we set up out by the gate, whatever it is, looking for leaders who can take the baton and run with it in their area of ministry. So that's huge for us. So we look for leaders. We bring them alongside of us to watch us do ministry, and then we give them the opportunity to do ministry. And then the final step, which pastors have a hard time with, but I don't, is to turn them loose without a net, to do the ministry without me being there to catch them if they fall. So these are our core values. I want to share with you, I have 21 things that God did in 2013. There's probably more. There might even be less, but anyway, I thought I would just run through these so we can celebrate together and then have the praise band come up and lead us in some more songs. But what I think is good is it's good for us to stop once in a while and reflect. What has God done? In Psalm 77, David is distraught. He's depressed. He was often depressed. If you're depressed, read the Psalms, because David was right there with you. He was overwhelmed. His enemies hated him. He was wondering where God was. And that's a common theme in the Psalms. Where are you, God? Where are you? I'm drowning here. And the one thing he said that turned his whole mindset halfway through the Psalm is, I will remember the works of God. I'll remember what God has done. And this is why it's good. I don't do it, so I shouldn't recommend it, but I've heard people journal, and it's really good to do that and go, wow, look what God, I forgot about that. Look what God did early in our marriage. Look what God did to get me through school. Look what God did here. I think it's good for us to have these markers, historical markers in the ground to remember the mighty works of God, to remember what God has done in our life. So let me just go through some of these. One of the first things I wanted to do when I got here, which took a while to actually accomplish, was have a new website. And I realized that in a city like ours, English speakers are predominantly going to find us in two ways, through a friend or through an English language church online. And I searched, before we moved here, I searched English-speaking churches, Mexico City, and Union Church was the first one that came up. Maybe some of you found that. How many of you came to church, to found our church through the internet? Yeah, so that's the first thing. So then I figured all these people were going to go. That was our front door right there. So that was the first thing. It took a few months to get that, but we got that up and running, and we've heard tons of people talk about finding us through the internet. I see it on connection cards every week. So that was a big deal for us to have a face out there in cyberspace that really represented who we are and that we're actually still here and alive and the lights are still on and the doors open. We created a connection team. One of the benefits I had before we started our church in Long Beach is we spent a few months visiting, I think we visited 25 or 30 churches, just doing research on what churches were like. Research has shown by people who do it, like Barna Group, research has shown, think about this, don't forget this, that the average person who visits a church has made up their mind whether they will visit again before the preacher even gets up to speak. What was the parking lot like? Well, we don't have a parking lot, but that's Mexico City. How were they welcomed? What were the snacks like? Was it easy to figure out where the kids' classes were? Was there a teacher in the kids' class? If you have an outsider's perspective, and that was the perspective I had coming here a year ago, I always try to look at our church for the first time, even though I've been here for a year now, and I see it every day. I try to imagine, what's it like coming to Union Church for the first time? Well, if you walk onto a campus like ours for the first time, you walk onto into the garden, into the patio area, the first thing you're going to do is this. Where do we go? Especially if you've got an armful of kids. So the first thing we needed to do was to establish a central information and welcome area so that when you step foot on our campus, we're there to greet you. Imagine being invited to your friend's house, and you go there, and that you knock, and the door sort of creaks open, and you're like, hello? And if you're like me, you just walk in, make yourself at home. I did. So you would walk in and be like, hello? And you have to spend like 5 minutes looking for anybody in the house to welcome you. That's really creepy. That's really weird. One of the churches we visited was like that. It was a total Stephen King novel. We had gotten there maybe 15 minutes late because it was like an hour from where we lived. So the church started at like 11. We show up at 11:15. There's a parking lot full of cars. It was their own facility. And we walk in what seemed to be the entrance, and there's nobody. There's nobody. There's the faint sounds of music down one hall. There are a bunch of closed doors, and we're looking going, and there's two families and two single girls. There's like 10 of us there, and we're all standing there. We've got our little kids in tow, and we start walking, and we split up. We're like, okay, we'll go this way, you go that way. If you hear something, take this flare gun and shoot it off, and we'll come and we'll find you, okay? And it seriously, we walked around for like 5 minutes in the halls, and that's a long time as a stranger. I'm like, everybody here is dead. And finally, some lady comes out of a Sunday school class, obviously, you know, her hair is all disheveled, must have been the two-year-old class, and she's like running for, I don't know, paper towels to clean up something, probably. And she like runs past us, and we're like, hello, 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 we're new here. And she's like, whatever, man. No, she wasn't that bad, but seriously, we were like, I would never come back to this. And we're like, we're veteran Christians, we're semi-pro, actually. I would never, if I were not a believer, not a Christian, I would never come back to this church. Or if I did, this first impression would never leave me. So I didn't want that to happen in any church that I was leading. So it was big for us to have people there, preferably friendly people, to greet you when you walk in the gate. And so that's why we established a connection ministry, a connection team, which has been really awesome. The next thing we did was to start working on the kids ministry. When I came, there was basically two ladies who were kind of working with kids, and one really was teaching, and she was kind of burnt out, and it was, the kids ministry was sort of like, if we have kids this Sunday, we'll have a class. So we established a consistent, prioritized ministry. I met with them, and I said, look, and their class had gotten shifted and shuffled from room to room because what was going on here is that Union was needing to rent out more space to organizations and whatnot for their offices, and that meant less space for Sunday school classes for the kids. And so I said, look, the world is your oyster. What class do you want? And what we had, if you go out the back door, you go along the patio to the welcome tent, and you come back up into the main educational entrance, you'll see a big classroom on the left with glass doors. That was a library when I got here. That was a library, but it was more like a book museum because nobody ever went in there. We were talking one night, and I said, wait, why not use that room? That's an awesome room, and it's not being used for anything else. And so I talked to the ladies who were doing Sunday school, and they're like, yeah, I mean, that's great. That's awesome. So we went in. We gave away all the books. We tore out the bookshelves. We fixed the walls. We painted, recarpeted, and made just this awesome room. And then as we grew, we divided it into two classes. We have Sunday school for kids. We have the nursery for kids up to three. And they go in there right away. And then halfway through the service, as you guys saw this morning, for the 4 to 9-year-olds, they go off to their two classrooms. After 9 years old, we think that kids should probably be in here. And that's why we try to craft a worship service that relates to kids. That's why I'll make fun of Justin Bieber every 3 weeks, just so kids will pay attention and feel like they're being taken care of here. So we believe that the older kids should transition into big church, as it's called. And the thing that we did was we have Sunday school every week, come hell or high water. I said hell as the place, so that's okay in that context. I know some of you are looking at me like he just said hell in church. No matter what, come heck or high water, we will have Sunday school. Even in the summer when a lot of people take off on vacation, we will have it so that you know if you invite your friends with their 5 kids, they're not going to be surprised but that we don't have it today. The only time we violate that is if we're having a whole congregational thing in here, like Christmas Eve, for example. So then when we addressed the issue of the nursery, if you go into those doors over there and you go way down the hall to the end of the building, the last door on your right is a nursery for kids 0 to 3. I don't think there's any kids who are really 0, but it's just always numbered that way in churches. And we went in there, we found toys from the 50s. We found this one little car, plastic car that they ride on that the steering wheel easily popped off, exposing this jagged metal post. We thought, definitely keep that for fun. No, we got rid of that. We recarpeted that. And there were nanas in there that were being paid to watch your kids. And their arrival was sort of semi-consistent. And I said, why are we paying nanas? We have a church of people. Let's start a list of people who want to serve in the area of nursery, and let's have our own people do it. That's part of serving. And so we asked the nanas to not come anymore, and we have this whole list of like a dozen or 15 people who serve in the area of nursery. We expanded the music ministry and musical genres. The idea here is not musical style so much as communication. The church has to communicate the gospel relevantly to its culture. And so that affects everything we do, from the type of pan dulce we buy to the type of music we play in here. So we expanded, we created a greater variety of music and a greater relatability of music to a wider culture, so that hopefully when you come to church, you're hearing music that you relate to. Now, it's impossible to please everybody, but we wanted to expand the bandwidth, so we created 2 praise bands, praise team. One's a praise team, one's a praise band. You'll notice that they switch off week to week, basically. So that's why we did that. We saw 5 people baptized in 2013, which was pretty awesome. There's almost nothing as cool as going to a baptism. So that was a real great time of rejoicing, because look, the gospel is about winning people to Christ, and Jesus said when you make disciples, baptize them. So that's why people get baptized. We started 2 community groups, one at our house next door and one in Roma. And we're hoping, like I said, to have another one up and running in a few weeks. I discovered really late that Mexico has this big thing called Children's Day. And so like the week of, I discovered that it's a huge celebration here. We don't have that in America. Maybe we do, but I've always thought that every day was Children's Day in America. But it's a big deal here. So we rented a bunch of bounce houses, brincolines, and we put them in our backyard next to the church, and we had just tons of kids show up and celebrate that, which they stayed all afternoon, which was really awesome, and we're hoping that it'll be, you know, twice as big this year. We did a food drive for all of December. In fact, that's continuing right now. Because we're still arranging with two organizations to receive the food. So if you're still interested in donating food, you have a couple more weeks to do it. You can bring it to the table at the welcome tent and just set it there on Sunday mornings, or you can bring it to the church office anytime you would like. We reached out to youth through three, what we called live 1, 2, and 3. They were basically sort of concerts / Bible studies, and we raised up Peter Child to lead our Sunday morning class. We had other people who were leading it who were sort of feeling like we want to do this, but we'd be willing to hand it off if somebody comes who really has a passion and a drive to do this. And Peter came, which was a huge blessing for us and our youth ministry. We have a men's ministry with a monthly men's breakfast. We're hoping to, one of the coolest things we did in California, which I want to do here, is man night. So hopefully we'll do a man night here pretty soon where you bring whatever meat you want to barbecue, we'll barbecue it for you, we'll provide baked potatoes and otherwise no vegetables, because, you know, that's man night, right? So we just sit around and be men and smell bad, and hopefully this will be a great opportunity to encourage each other and sharpen each other for Christ. We have a women's Bible study that meets on Tuesdays, and that's been growing and going awesome. My wife leads that. My wife, along with another lady, are going to start a temporary study through a book called The Excellent Wife. It's going to be on Thursday mornings starting in February, so if you're available and that relates to you, hopefully you'll take advantage of that. Number 15, we've established community relationships, but we just feel like we're barely beginning. I mean, we work with the American Benevolent Society that actually has an office upstairs and has for years. We work with Operation Blessing, which is a huge relief organization. We've become very good friends with Scott and Yvonne, who lead that, and they have office space here. We've been developing our relationship with Newcomers. Newcomers is an awesome organization that also rents space from us. And it's kind of cool because I think they've been sort of reviving as an organization too and getting some really cool people into different leadership positions. So we love those guys, and they have great events and great appetizers. We've been working with Benny Yu. Benny Yu goes to Vereda Church, and he has a place called Pozo de Vida, which is for women who've been rescued out of human trafficking. Benny's going to come and share about Pozo de Vida on February 16th with us. And then after church that day, we're having like a roundtable lunch discussion at my house next door, which I think the table has become about 50 feet in diameter because of all the people who are coming. But if you're interested in coming to that, please let me know. You need to RSVP. You can do it by responding to the weekly email that I send out, which you can get on that list if you fill out a connection card and you mark the spot, I want to receive the weekly email. But we'd love to have you come. We're just starting to talk about, how does Union Church do social justice? How does Union Church have an impact in not only small ways, but big ways? What does Union Church do about drug cartels? What does Union Church do about human trafficking? What does our church do about the meth epidemic? What do we do? And it can be overwhelming if you look at it, but there are people who are already working in these different areas. We've built relationships with Stephen Spivey, who has a ministry called A Relentless Pursuit, and he ministers to street kids in different parts of the city. We've actually went out on the streets with him, and we're going to do it again soon. So if you're interested in doing that and getting a perspective of the other side of life in Mexico City, you can join us for that. We went house building with the American School. So these are some of the things that we've been working on, and that's why we're having this roundtable to look at. I don't know how this escaped people's notice, but within the last probably 10 years, the issue of human trafficking and sex slavery just exploded in the minds of people of the Christian community, so that we suddenly became aware that there are millions of slaves today, people being being abducted from the street and put into prostitution, people being threatened, girls being threatened. And it's not in third world countries only. I read a story of this girl in L.A. who her neighborhood was run by a gang, and they said, "You're going to be a prostitute." And she says, "No, I'm not." And they said, "You're going to do it, or we're going to go and beat up your parent, your dad, and your brothers, and you know, we know where you live." And this is just disturbing and troubling, and this is all over the world. And the church needs to be doing something in this area. So this is why we're having this discussion at our house on the 16th of February. Number 16, we started giving away 10% of offerings. The church is asking church members to give to the church, but because times were tough, it takes a lot of money to upkeep a building like this, especially with a small number of people coming. The church stopped giving to needy organizations and to the poor. And so mid-year last year, we started giving away 10% of the offerings we received, because I think we're honoring God by doing that. I felt like we needed to do that, even if we couldn't afford to, and we couldn't afford to do it. But that's God's math. You have to do that. So we started doing that, and hopefully that will expand and grow as we go along. Number 17, we helped with the Acapulco relief effort. We sent tons of food, and several people from Union went down to help out down there. 18, we put up Christmas lights. Let me explain that one. We put up Christmas lights. Why do I think that's important? I think it's important because people can't find Union Church during the day if they're driving up Reforma because of all the trees out there. Good thing I didn't bring my chainsaw. I could have gotten in a lot of trouble, because I think we need more visibility, and there's just tons of trees between us and the main part of the street. But what I noticed is driving by at night, and I would talk to different people. I would talk to taxi drivers. I would talk to bus drivers when we were riding the bus up back from the city. And I would say, "Do you know where Union Church is?" And they'd be like, "No, no clue." They drive by our church every day because they're taxi drivers and bus drivers. And so I thought it would be awesome. Why don't we spend, you know, 10,000, 20,000 pesos and put up a bunch of Christmas lights that can be seen from the street. We live on the most renowned street we don't live here. You don't. Even God doesn't. We are on the most renowned street in the city, one of the busiest streets. Thousands and thousands of people commute by every day and don't know the church is here. And so we lit up the church so at night people driving by would go, "Hey, there's a church there." And it's not just because we want pretty lights. It's because we want people to know we're here. We want people to know the name of Union Church. Look, if you don't drink coffee and you are going to start drinking coffee, where are you going to go? Starbucks. I want us to take that same mentality so that if somebody's ever going to go to church, they're going to go to Union Church, provided they speak English well enough, that they either, because we are here and we've made it known, or our people have their tentacles all over the city and our people are different. My goal is that the average Christian from our church would be in their workplace, and that over years of being a faithful Christian in that environment, someone says, "Well, if I'm ever going to go to church, I'm going to Bob's church. Because if it produces a guy like that, then that's where I want to go. That's where I want to be." So that's the Christmas light thing, is to make people aware of our church being here. And it was pretty awesome because we saw 239 people come on Christmas Eve to our Christmas Eve service. It was amazing. And all those people holding candles. What a fire hazard. The whole place could have gone up in like 2 seconds, which would bring more people back next year. But we're not doing, this is not a rock concert. What else? One last thing here. Two last things. One is we had a girl in our church come up with this idea of doing what she called a children's Christmas celebration. And we did it the first weekend of December. And it was going to be like basically like a kid's Christmas program. And I got the willies when she said that, because that kind of stuff, that's why we don't do plays very much. We don't do concerts very much, because Christians always try to do what the world does, but lesser quality, i.e. Christian movies. No criticism there, but I just didn't want us to put on this hokey thing, you know, and the manger falls over and baby Jesus rolls down on the, what, you know, that kind of thing. And it was awesome. It turned out to be great. Because we were so scared it would go long, we overplanned it to be short. I think it was like 18 minutes long, which nobody ever complains about. So we did this Christmas celebration. We put a bunch of bounce houses in the yard, nice coffee, hot chocolate, and snacks. And people came, and people were talking to me afterwards, and like, if I had known this was going to be this good, we would have brought our neighbors. Kids hung out and bounced all night. So that was pretty awesome. And the last thing I want to say is that what we noticed, bottom line, is two things: spiritual and numerical growth in our church. Spiritual growth in the sense that people are reading their Bibles again. People are reading a Bible for the first time. People are beginning to pray. People are beginning to pray on Sunday morning. People are joining community groups. People are really taking the message of Christ and saying, I want to live this. I want to do this. What do I do? How do I do this? How do I get started following Jesus? And then numerical growth. We grew by about 70% in the last year, which is just amazing. And you're just like, well, those are just numbers. But they're not just numbers. Every number is a person. And to me, it's a sign that God is in this and blessing what we're doing. So that's our hope. What we're trying to create on a Sunday morning is a warm, welcoming environment that you could come, whether you're a committed Christian, searching, or an atheist, that you would come here, you wouldn't feel like an outsider, stupid, or awkward. Hopefully that we're communicating to you in a way that speaks, that is relevant, that has an impact, whether it's the music, whether it's the fellowship outside, or whether it's the sermons, and that when you come, you're taken care of, just like you're coming to our house. That's our goal. It's a work in progress. It's definitely a work in progress. We're not there. Sometimes we're scrambling around behind the scenes because the Sunday school teacher didn't show up, or we don't have the stuff for connection outside, or the electric blue or whatever, and we can't get the music started. It's always like that. The image is we're building the plane while it flies. And so when you come, sometimes it's not going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect, but hopefully at the end of the day you came, you felt warmly welcome and included, and that we cared about you. That's our goal. Because this is the mission of the church, to be Jesus to our generation. That's our goal. And to show him to our generation. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for giving us your word, as we're not left to try to figure out what it is we're supposed to do. We have your sure word written. We pray that you would help us as a church to be faithful to that mission that you've called us, to be salt and light, to love the people around us. In Jesus' name, amen.